midday on the Rural Radio Network. Welcome to it. Here we get into a Thursday and looking at a forecast that is likely to take the whole plains into pretty much the warmth that, I guess pretty much you want for a maturing crop at this point of the year. But the thing is, it's also going to be continuing to force in some smoke into some areas of our region, the Pacific Northwest wildfires that are still likely to affect some air quality where the Nebraska Huskers will be playing tomorrow. And we'll get into that as we get into weather. And right now, though, let's take it around the horn, find out what's coming up on midday today. Jesse Harding has the headlines from Ag.
I feel like there used to be a pretty defined break in between State Fair and Husker Harvest Days with events. That's no longer true. I think we have three events that the farm team is going to this week in that just that short time in between. So for the 12-13, we'll get some more audio on what happened with the Soil Health Partnership that they had a field day that took place yesterday. For the 12-19, Dewey Nelson's going to be with Dean Hefta, Water Street Solutions, discussing the markets and what their activity will be looking like at that time. For the newsmaker, Bryce Duskett is with Hillary Miracle, Nebraska Common Ground Farmer, discussing a GMO food dialogue event that took place at Nebraska Innovation Campus yesterday. I believe that was also sponsored in part by the Nebraska Soybean Board. So that event happened yesterday, and Bryce was there. And then for the 1-17, I am with Scott McFeeters. He's a producer from Gothenburg who discusses new ethanol blender pumps being added to the Blue Heron Fueling Station, which is located just south of the Gothenburg exit. They have a soft opening on September 16th and a ribbon cutting on September 28th, and this is a pretty unique opportunity for that location and for the town of Gothenburg.
Okay, very nice. Thanks. Gothenburg really on the roll. Let's go on over here to Mr. Brandon Bennett, find out what's going on in sports today.
The aforementioned Huskers, at least right now, game is still on as scheduled. The Pacific Northwest, as you mentioned with the wildfires, they had canceled some games on Friday evening, but for right now, at least latest information that we have is Husker game is still on as scheduled. We're also going to talk about University of Nebraska. Kearney football, they hope to go 2-0, but it's a tall task. They have to travel to the number 15 ranked team in the nation, Emporia State, and for the first time in 36 years, all four women in today's U.S. Open semifinals are Americans.
Really?
Yes.
Well, go USA.
That happens once, at least in, it's never happened in Jesse's lifetime. It's only happened once in mine, so I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
Whoop, whoop. All right, it's Dave Schroeder sitting in over here on business.
Well, good afternoon. U.S. stocks are edging lower in midday trading. They're pulled down by insurers and other financial companies as investors weighing the prospects of big losses from Hurricane Irma. Allstate fell today and Prudential fell 2%. Irma that has hampered the Northern Caribbean is projected to hit Florida this weekend, of course. Also, the sale of Cabela's, that appears to be going through now. One of the last agencies to sign off on that situation has done so just recently. We'll tell you more about that coming up.
Well, let's bring in Paul Perkins here to find out a little bit about air quality in the Northwest.
Yeah, if you know of any Husker fans going to the game, or of course you're concerned about the game actually being played, it should be going on as scheduled. The air quality right now at very unhealthy levels in Northwest Oregon, and specifically Eugene, Oregon, but conditions as a whole expected to gradually improve through tomorrow. Thanks to an onshore flow, it's going to bring in some cooler temperatures through the end of the week and into the weekend, and that will help to actually clear out the smoke in Eugene, Oregon.
Well, that was good news, because earlier on, I know the coach was even saying, they're preparing as if they're going to play a game, but no one was really sure. It's nice to know that it's going to most likely take place.
Yeah, and I know there's been talk, of course, that Oregon had to move practice because of the poor air quality there. Yeah. Can you imagine? It's bad enough walking in it and breathing it in. Exactly. Working out is another story in it. Yeah.
All right, let's bring on the rest of our ag weather here with Paul Perkins, brought to you by Holdridge Irrigation.
Going to be warmer today thanks to some south winds kicking in on the backside of an area of high pressure. That is departing up towards east. Some patchy fog from the Pacific Northwest wildfires will remain today over the high plains and parts of northwest Kansas. It's thanks to a ridge of high pressure that continues to get pushed to the south, and some of that smoke coming down that ridge of high pressure into eastern Colorado and western Kansas. Most areas expect to remain dry the next 7 days. Over the weekend and next week, we'll see a ridge of high pressure track from the Rockies onto the plains to continue our warming trend. Temperatures mostly warmer than normal, as opposed to the cooler than normal temperatures that we have been enjoying. Mainly light rain is possible for tomorrow night into Saturday night as that ridge breaks down and allows the weak disturbance to track through the region. Just some small chances for rain with the system, and any rainfall amounts will be light due to a limited amount of moisture. In the long-term forecast, our temperatures forecast to be mostly warmer than normal in Nebraska and Kansas. Tuesday, that first day of Husker harvest days, all the way through the 20th of September. Southeast Nebraska and central and east Kansas expected to turn a little bit closer to seasonal, though, late next week through the 20th. It's a good likelihood in Nebraska, Kansas, there will be below normal rainfall Tuesday through the 20th. The picture on the most recent drought monitor improved from last week. Abnormal dryness found in the southern half of the panhandle, also west central Nebraska, along and west of a line from Ainsworth to North Platte and Hays Center. Also abnormal dryness from Hebron on over to the southeast corner of Nebraska, also right around Omaha and the northeast corner of Nebraska. Moderate drought exists around Valentine and the southwest panhandle. For Kansas, it's abnormally dry in the central and extreme northeast. Moderate drought is found in Kansas from Stockton to DeBolate, south to just south of the Arkansas River, and also around Marysville in the northeast. The weather factors keeping the attention to market traders today include a continued cool pattern with slow progress of soybean pod filling and also multiple tropical storm issues. Irma remains a deadly Category 5 hurricane, one of the strongest storms on record in the Atlantic. Irma should reach southern Florida Saturday night or early Sunday as a major hurricane. Florida crops at risk include citrus, sugarcane, and vegetables. Cotton, peanuts are at risk in Georgia and the Carolinas. Now, Irma should remain east of the Delta. Their forecast looks dry this next week as they recover from a wet late summer and then Tropical Depression Harvey. Above normal temperatures will persist in much of the west, but an increase in shower activity may locally aid the wildfire containment efforts. Cool conditions will linger in the southeast, while warmer weather will gradually overspread the plains and upper Midwest. The cool but mild conditions in the Midwest through this weekend may hinder the soybean development. Conditions for the northern plains favorable right now for filling and maturing corn and soybeans, and no damaging cold weather is expected in the next 10 days. Farther north in the Canadian prairies, conditions favorable for wheat harvest. The cooler conditions next week, though, may bring some readings down to that frost level in the Canadian prairies and possibly even a light freeze. Soil moisture in the southern plains mostly adequate just ahead of some winter wheat planting.
We are definitely seeing those cooler temperatures move in here. Must be September in Nebraska.
Yep, the drier air also overtaking us, yep, for sure.
Absolutely. Well, that's good for getting a crop all dried out and not having to spend a lot of time doing it otherwise and spending the money to do that. So we'll all just hang on tight and look for a Husker win, move on from there into Husker harvest days, and should be quite a little ride here in the next week or so.
Yeah, it looks actually dry for Husker harvest days. Usually we kind of see a spot of a shower, but right now that doesn't look like it's going to be the case.
All right, and when you need weather anytime.
KRVN.com.
Look at agriculture information on the Rural Radio Network. I'm Jesse Harding. The Soil Health Partnership continued with their field days from Shelby yesterday, and Shaylee Peters has more.
Grower Greg Whitmore hosted yesterday's field day and had an informational session followed by a field demonstration. Jacob Ness, field manager with the Soil Health Partnership, says the field days they're hosting throughout the Midwest are key.
Well, when we have our field days, I look at it as one of the most important things that we can do is get out there and have these field days where we have, you know, agronomists, farmers, students come to them, get the word out about soil health, what we're seeing, what we're doing.
Ness says they're always on the lookout for farmer participation.
We're continually looking for new relationships with growers, and I want to point them to our website, soilhealthpartnership.org. You can go on that website and you can enroll in our newsletter and get involved. And that's a great place for us to start looking when we do have funding to enroll additional farmers next year.
These will continue throughout the month of September in western Iowa and another in eastern Nebraska. And again, for more information, you can visit soilhealthpartnership.com. For the Rural Radio Network, I'm Shaylee Peters.
An American Farm Bureau official disputes the claim made by media and others that President Trump's six-month grace period for Congress to come up with a replacement for the DACA immigration program will delay tax reform efforts for agriculture. Joe Gangwish has more.
AFB trade advisor Pat Wolf doesn't buy the claim that Congress has now been knocked off its fall schedule for tax reform by DACA repeal and spending bills. Wolf says passing tax reform, which could boost producers' bottom line with low commodity prices, has never been easy, but she points out that Congress has been laying the groundwork for reform.
Congress has been doing what it needs to do to get ready for a tax package. So, people get back to Washington this week. Nothing's really certain until they get reorganized and get going, but there's every reason to believe that tax legislation will start moving through Congress in September.
Wolf cautions that doesn't mean tax reform will get done right away. The stated goal is to do it this year, but she says the schedule could spill over into the beginning of 2018. For the Rural Radio Network, I'm Joe Gangwish.
Kansas State University has entered into an agreement with PepsiCo to focus on making nutritious food and beverage products more affordable and accessible. As a part of the collaboration, the university's faculty and students will work on projects to develop innovative new product ideas for the global food and beverage leader. The partnership will leverage the university's research strengths across multiple food and life sciences to help the company attain its standard goal of increasing the availability of convenient, affordable, and enjoyable nutrition for consumers around the world. PepsiCo officials say the goal is part of the company's 2025 sustainability agenda, which includes aspirations to transform its product portfolio by significantly reducing sugar, salt, and saturated fat levels in its products and continuing to expand its focus on delivering positive nutrition. K-State professors say that this is the first partnership for PepsiCo and Kansas State University, and the Senior Vice President for Global Snacks Research and Development at PepsiCo say they're excited for the opportunity and their long-standing affiliation with K-State University to take it to the next level. That's Look at Agriculture Information on the Rural Radio Network. I'm Jesse Harding.
Welcome back to the program. And wheat leads the way down, corn is lower, but soybeans higher. Let's talk with Dean Hefta, Water Street Solutions. Dean, you would think a weaker dollar would promote some exports and maybe even some traders' minds as far as turning bullish. That hasn't happened, it seems.
Yeah, you know, the past year or so, it's been hard to draw direct correlations between our currencies and moves in the commodities on a given day. But I think in the longer term trends, it's still something that is important and significant. We not only have the weaker dollar, but you've got a stronger Russian ruble, the Brazilian real is higher, the Canadian dollar is higher. So all of those things on the long term continue to put us in a good position and should continue to help us to compete, you know, in the Gulf with our wheat offers. And we've just been struggling with the Russian crop and some of the concern globally just about supply. But I think wheat should stabilize down in here.
And if wheat stabilizes, maybe corn would too. And we're getting ready for harvest. In some areas of the country, they have started the corn harvest. What does that do for price?
Well, we're in that interesting period of the year where you start shifting the market mindset from supply to demand. And that happens anywhere from the end of August into the first part of October. And the question on the market's mind right now is, as every year, what's really out there? And there's a lot of variability that we're hearing across the Corn Belt. It's going to be a few weeks yet before a lot of areas get going, but there are some parts of the Corn Belt where they are getting into it now and finding both, you know, areas that are better than they thought it would be, and some disappointments as well. So markets trying to get their handle on the supply, but now looking past that into the demand side too. We typically expect this supportive trade after you get past this harvest blow.
And you have the report from USDA next Tuesday. That will affect the trade as well, won't it?
Yeah, so I would expect some quiet trade between now and then, and the market will be looking for trends. I don't expect any real major changes happening from the USDA. Over time, you'd expect, my expectation is they continue to take a little bit off the top end on both corn and beans. I'd say the wild card here is not just corn, but more so in beans. A lot of reports from areas where the number of beans per pod are seen to be down. And now the question of how are we filling in some of these areas that have just been so dry, and we're going to be dry for another week ahead yet.
What have you found as far as ethanol production this week?
Really good ethanol production, and our supplies are back down. So there's been some concern that production was sagging, supplies were growing, but we've really reversed that. And so the ethanol is back in action and rolling as we move here into the new crop supply.
And we're waiting for a reversal as well in these cash cattle prices, aren't we?
Yeah, it looks like feed yards are holding out for some better prices here, and that's provided some good support here today. And it looks like if you look at the chart, you know, over the past several days, we're running out of steam for the downside. Now the question is going to be, can we follow through to get some more of a bounce, maybe 2, 3, 4 bucks here in the futures the next few days of trade.
Thanks for the comments, Dean. Dean Hefta, Water Street Solutions. Go to waterstreet.org for more information. That's waterstreet.org. Yes, contrast today with cattle sharply higher, but lean hogs sharply lower. Dewey Nelson on the Rural Radio Network.
You're listening to the Midday Program on the Rural Radio Network, and it's time to check sports with Brandon Bennett.
Good afternoon, Dirk. The University of Nebraska Kearney football team looks to improve to 2-0 on the young season this evening as the Lopers hit the road to take on the number 15-ranked team in the nation, Emporia State University. Last week, UNK picked up a huge win to start the season with a 14-3 upset victory over Missouri Western State University. UNK head coach Josh Lynn says it was big to get the first one to kick off the season.
You know, it's good to get a win. Say what it is. The next thing is, you know, we enjoyed that win, but, the next day we were back to work. You know, the kids have done a good job with that. I mean, there's been no hangover in regards to the victory. Our kids, you know, were back to work the next day and ready to get going against Emporia State.
Coach Lynn also feels his team showed some real character in that victory.
You know what I was extremely happy with is our will to win. Defense answered the bell all night long. And, offensively, we moved the ball enough, but we got to move the ball a little more. But, you know, the one thing about it that, you know, sometimes teams in our position tend to do is, you know, you start getting in a close game, it's hard to find a way to win, and these young men found a way to win.
UNK has struggled against the Hornets in recent years. The Lopers' last victory in this series was all the way back in 2014 when they upset Emporia State 42-20. Overall, the Hornets have won 9 out of the last 11 games in this series dating back to 1988. Kickoff is set for 7 p.m. this evening, pregame at 6:30. And, of course, you can catch that game on 93.1 The River, KRVN.com, or by downloading the River app. In its second year of six-man football for Elwood, and the Pirates started this season with an easy win over Elba. Elwood head coach Patrick Ropers is cautiously optimistic things will be better this season than last year. Wilcox Hildreth beat Elwood last year 48-21, and Ropers sees this matchup similar to the one a year ago where the Pirates struggled with 5 turnovers.
It's basically the same kids with a year more of experience. I mean, they were a ton of sophomores last year. You have the Jenkins kid back. He's had 2,000-yard seasons in his freshman and sophomore year alone. You know, the Tobiasen kid's back. The Gruel kid is a good, lengthy athlete. So they're going to be tough. I know they had a tough task last week on playing a 3-time champion, but I try not to overlook that. Yeah, they struggled, but they're still a good football team. I mean, they have got some experience, and they're going to be real tough for us this week.
And the Cleveland Indians try for a franchise record 15th straight victory when ace Corey Kluber takes the mound versus the White Sox later this evening in Chicago. Cleveland won last night behind a gem from Carlos Carrasco, matching its longest win streak ever and also taking its 10th straight win on the road. Kluber has allowed two or fewer runs in four straight starts and is 6-1 over his last seven outings. That's a look at sports. Stay tuned. More of Midday is just ahead. You're listening to the Rural Radio Network.
Sunny today with a high near 83 for tonight, mostly clear, low of around 52, and then for Friday, sunny with a high near 87. From the KRVN News Center, I'm Scott Foster. On Wednesday in Gothenburg, EMS, fire and rescue, school officials, students, and Gothenburg Health all took place in a mass casualty simulation. Heather Combs-Platter of Gothenburg Health talks about it.
In Gothenburg, we have the privilege of working with local law enforcement, EMS. The school has been a huge contributor to this. We have students from the One Act Club who are helping out as our actors, and they're in moulage and full makeup to portray the injuries involved in the accident. We have other players in the medical field that are helping us out, and it really is a great opportunity for the community to come together, simulate an emergency.
The drill took place at the Monsanto Water Utilization Facility. The scenario involved a grain truck hitting a bus load of kids. Gothenburg Superintendent Mike Teon says that the full functional simulation was important.
Well, I think it's important on numerous reasons. Number one, it was good for the school to actually go through a drill. We talk about this type of stuff almost on a monthly basis, but to actually go through the drill, it substantially increased the intensity of the exercise, which was good for all of us. I think it was equally important that all of the entities were involved, whether it be the hospital, the school, the EMS, the volunteer fire department, the law enforcement. It was equally important for all of them to be involved because sometimes we work in our own little silos, and even though we communicate fairly well and everybody's always willing to help and be a part of it, actually doing it in a crisis situation was good for the entire community.
Tian added that many of the real-world issues also came into the simulation, making it very real and emotional. Governor Pete Ricketts has appointed Cale Burdick to the 8th Judicial District County Court with the primary office in O'Neill. The 32-year-old Burdick is currently an associate attorney general at the Nebraska Department of Justice. He is also a special assistant United States attorney in the United States Attorney's Office for the District of Nebraska. The vacancy is due to the retirement of Judge Alan Broadbeck. The University of Nebraska system president says the system's failure to reach a conservative estimate on enrollment growth shouldn't further affect the university's budget-cutting process. University administrators had planned to cut $30 million in costs over the next 2 years while also raising tuition to generate additional revenue. The cut comes as the system tries to close a $49 million budget shortfall created by loss of state appropriations. The plan had depended on an estimate of 1% enrollment growth across the university system. The system's total enrollment grew by 0.3% this year, putting enrollment at about 52,500 students. President Hank Bound says the system won't be forced to make additional cuts or enact emergency tuition increases. During severe storm season, remember the Weather Watch never sleeps. From the KRVN News Center, I'm Scott Foster.
On the Rural Radio Network, I'm Bryce Duskin. When the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance organization set out to create a conversation about GMOs, the group wanted a diverse set of opinions. And, well, they got just that. A Los Angeles film director, American food activist, registered dietitian, organic cotton farmer from Texas, a university professor of ecological engineering, and a Nebraska farmer. These six people, representing different views and life experiences, gathered for an event yesterday at Nebraska Innovation Campus. The event was titled Food Dialogues Nebraska, Pivoting the GMO Conversation. For today's newsmaker, I catch up with panel member Hillary Miracle, a Nebraska Common Ground farmer from Albion, Nebraska. We began our conversation about what the panel was about.
Well, the panel was GMOs was kind of the base of it, but then we talked about food production. We talked about labeling. We got to the social justice issues of our food, entire food system. And so it was a lot of a lot of good ideas, a lot of different ideas, and great chance to just discuss them in an open forum.
Talk about your background and what makes you part of this panel and the perspective that you brought.
Yeah, my perspective was that of the farmer. We farm in Albion, Nebraska, and so, you know, we've grown GMOs my whole adult life, and so the opportunity to get to talk about why we do what we do, the care that farmers put into our production, and the decision-making we use. It's not just, we look at, obviously we have to make a profit, but it's also we look at the environment and how it affects other people and how it affects our entire food system.
Talk about some of the perspectives, some of the nitty-gritty about what was discussed today that kind of opened your eyes and the perspective you shared on those topics.
Yeah, we got down into some really interesting things, especially talking about new breeding technologies coming up, CRISPR and some of the gene editing within individual items. We're looking forward to seeing where that goes and the opportunities that's going to bring the entire food industry. Some of the social justice type things that we talk about, we don't think about those every day as farmers, and how we need the research. We need the public funded research. We need our universities. We need our extension service to be able to continue to not only make corn and soybeans and our major commodity crops better, but how do we help ensure that we can help with banana diseases in Africa? You know, we need those research dollars, and we continue to fight for them, and we know they're really important.
From your perspective, I know you all grow GMOs on your farm. Talk directly kind of to a consumer and the message you shared today of why you all have GMOs on your operation.
We utilize GMOs because it makes us better farmers. It makes us more efficient. We use fewer pesticides, you know, fewer insecticides, fewer herbicides. It lets us do more with less. It increases our yields. And a huge piece of it is the ecological part. It lets us be better stewards of the land. It helps us go over the field fewer times, less cultivation, which in turn decreases erosion. And so anytime we can do that, we're improving our soil health, which in turn improves our crops, and then we're able to feed our animals, and it just becomes a stronger cycle if we can do a better job of caring for the land. And GMOs have helped us do that.
What's your biggest takeaway from today's panel?
I think my biggest takeaway personally is always listen to all sides of the story. And as a farmer, it's our job to help our customer understand. And one of the comments that Danny made was, we always say consumers, you know, that's what we think about, our consumer that eats our food. We're all eaters. And I really liked that comment that she made, because it's not just the consumer, it's not just me as the mom at the grocery store, it's all of my kids that are eating that food too. All of us are affected by the care that we take in growing the food that we make available to the world.
And so you also mentioned during the panel, you can't really worry about the 100% that are against you, but you have to try to sway those 80% of people who have an open mind about that.
I think to be able to hear the other viewpoints, you can always learn something. If I just stay in my box with my friends, how am I going to learn anything new? I need to be learning. As someone that's growing food, I need to understand all the sides of the issues so that I can properly understand the decisions I'm making. I also think it's important that as someone that promotes agriculture, that believes in what we're doing in agriculture, that I can't spend all of my time fighting with somebody that just wants to fight. You know, we talked about the bell curve and meeting in the middle, talking to those people that are willing to have a conversation. You know, maybe it's somebody that has heard something and it's just made them a little bit fearful of the food they're eating and what they're feeding their families. Well, I can have a conversation with them. We can talk about simple things and lead to that deeper conversation. We can build a relationship. But if it's an extreme activist that absolutely has no willingness to listen to the other side, then I need to be polite. I need to be cordial. I can have a conversation, but then I need to move on. I can't let them take all of my time. I need to work with the massive middle and hopefully help whoever has questions understand.
I'd love to hear your perspective for Nebraska farmers who are interested in doing what you're doing, telling your story and sharing about why GMOs are important. What are ways that you'd currently do to get involved that they can also do?
I think as a farmer, as a rancher, we have to get involved. I can't sit on my farm anymore. I know historically we've been private, humble people, and we want to sit on the farm and do our job and leave us alone. And unfortunately, the world we live in is global. We don't get to do that anymore. So get involved in your ag organizations, your commodity organizations. You know, our family is diversified. Our farm is diversified. So we've gotten involved in Nebraska Farm Bureau. That's just one example. You know, if you raise cattle, you should be in the cattlemen. If you raise hogs, you should be in the pork producers, corn, soybeans. As a farmer and rancher, you need to get involved. Your voice needs to be heard because it's important. There's not near as many farmers as there used to be, so every one of us has to step up, take a stand, be willing to stand in front of a camera. We're the ones who can tell our story. Nobody else can tell it like we can because we live it every day.
You can watch the entire panel discussion and learn more by visiting our website, ruralradio.com. Reporting for the Rural Radio Network, I'm Bryce Duskin.
Next, we talk with Joe Teal, Great Plains Commodities, in a tale of two cities again versus cattle and hogs today.
Yes, sir, there sure was. We had triple-digit gains out of the cattle and triple-digit losses out of the hogs. So you can't get much more opposite than that. Start out with the cattle. Cattle started out better and stayed better the majority of the day. And a lot of hopes that the packers are going to step up and buy cattle, but I haven't heard of anything. It's even hard to find bids. And what cattle have traded have been at lower money. So we have our own little contrast right within the cattle complex. The only place that I've heard of better prices, for example, have been in the feeders at some of the auctions. But and that was represented in the strength in the feeders today. Cutouts were, let's just call them unchanged, up a penny on the choice and 9 cents on the select. That's really just call it unchanged. So no help from there. We kind of faded there off the highs at the end of the day. So looking at tomorrow, I'm still going to look at the cash to be the leader. Over in the hogs, cash was pretty much the leader with the cash just a little bit softer to start out the day. The cutouts off again last night and once again today, so some weakness showing up once again. Product movement's been pretty good, but that weakness showing up in the cash price.
Thanks, Joe. Joe Teal, Great Plains Commodities. Call him at 800-328-0134. Dewey Nelson on the Rural Radio Network.
A unique opportunity is coming to Gothenburg. For the Rural Radio Network, I'm Jesse Harding. With me is Scott McFeeters. He is a farmer-producer from Gothenburg, and blender pumps for ethanol will be a main traction coming to Gothenburg. Scott, why don't you tell us first a little bit about this new opportunity for ethanol blender pumps in Gothenburg?
Well, there was an unbranded station, which means we could buy ethanol right, and we can make it available at a great price, different blends. Be E10, of course, but E15, and then 20, E30, E40, and E85.
And when it comes to you being involved in this, how did this spearhead this whole idea?
Well, I saw the need and the opportunity to get blender pumps out there so we can use more ethanol at a great price. And so just through my knowledge and promotion of ethanol with the ethanol board, I just knew that these opportunities are available and wanted to help the owners access that.
And when it comes to ethanol in the region of Nebraska, how big of a deal will this play for those who are looking to use ethanol or would like to try it out?
Well, that's a great question. There is 272 miles that you travel on the interstate, and unless you want to go a ways off the interstate, you can't find a blender pump. You can find E85, but not mid-grades of ethanol or mid-blends. So it is a fact that there are over 17,000 cars a day, vehicles a day, that go east and west on Interstate 80, and almost 3,000 that go north and south on Highway 47. So there's a lot of consumers that are actually wanting to buy mid-level blends of ethanol, so we wanted to make it available for them.
When it comes to this whole process of being able to put blender pumps in, I'm sure it's taken some time. What are some of those things that you've had to do in order to make this a possibility in Gothenburg?
Well, the first hurdle is probably the cost. The blender pumps are more expensive than traditional pumps or that just pump either E10 or E85. And so that gap needed to be filled with funding of some sort. And there's actually funding available from the Access Ethanol Nebraska and also from the USDA in the Blender Infrastructure Program.
So we've been talking about this ethanol, the opportunity for those in Gothenburg to be able to use this, but we haven't quite talked about where this location is in Gothenburg. So why don't you tell us where this is going to be available for consumers?
Sure. The majority of the businesses in the town of Gothenburg is located north of the Interstate 80 exit, number 211. The Blue Heron Campground also has a fueling station associated with it, but we're in need of upgraded pumps. And so this is located right south of the interstate.
So why don't you tell us when we're going to be able to use the ethanol that's going to be there in Gothenburg?
Well, our soft opening is September 16th, and so that's the same day as the state corn husking contest, and so right south of town, so there'll be a lot of exposure, people going by. And the grand opening is Thursday, September 28th, and we've invited the governor to be there, and he's planning to do that.
If someone's interested in more information about this, where's the best avenue for them to go?
I would say if you go on the internet and search the Nebraska Ethanol Board, there's some news items on there about it, and also Blue Heron Campground.
And that has been Scott McFeeters. He is producer in Gothenburg discussing the new Blue Heron blender pumps that will be available on the soft opening September 16th. And they're going to be doing a ribbon cutting on September 28th. And they have invited the governor. Again, the Blue Heron blender pumps will be located just south of the interstate at the Gothenburg exit. For the Rural Radio Network, I'm Jesse Harding.
We saw lower winter wheat futures as well as corn futures today, and that kind of dragged down soybeans at the end. Let's visit with John Payne, Senior Marketing Analyst with Daniels Ag Marketing in Chicago and publisher of the newsletter This Week in Grain. What's your assessment today?
Well, a pretty quiet day, really similar to the last three or four until the close there. The last 5 minutes got a little ugly, so got some profit taking, I'm sure, that's happening. Currency markets are on alert here. European Central Bank Chair Mario Draghi is kind of like our Janet Yellen over in Europe, really out talking the strong euro down today, and that is a little concerning for me. I think the dollar is probably looking to bottom here shorter term and then rally, and what that does to wheat and corn, who have, I think, caught a little tailwind from it, it may face a little bit of danger. You've got two kind of markets I'm watching relative to where we've been, 2015 and 2016. Big supply market carry-in years, good, decent to really good crops, depending on what you're looking at in 15 or 16. Both of them bottomed the same period that we saw a week ago when corn bottomed in the 2017 contract. In 2015, though, we did back off and retest those levels again one more time before proceeding up. In 2016, we never really saw those lows again. So I just kind of stand in the camp that 2015 might be more the comparable year here, and thinking that we might dip back down, say, to 350 corn on that December contract before it goes into the WASDE report. I think corn's still a buy at those levels, but you are going to see some forced liquidation off the farm combined with some profit-taking off the recent rally.
And have you noticed as well private forecasts have come out about the size of the crops, and they're pretty different from each other?
Yeah, it's a wild difference, and I'm not going to disagree with anybody who thinks this thing's a 165, 166. To be honest, we're in a world where, I mean, that has to be the error of the USDA. 2 bushels an acre at these levels, how can you be that specific, really? But given that the conditions haven't changed, I think to trade that way would be an error. I think we're going to see the USDA stick with their numbers. You know, maybe we're not at 169, maybe we're 168 and three quarters around there, but to think they're going to come off and admit a 165 before the combines have been rolling, I think is a little bit misguided. So that would be opportunity on breaks to be a buyer. I think up here, you know, looking at DC 18 potentially, I'm a seller of that market up here above $4. I think, you know, there's just a lot of risk for that market to come back off if things would change, combined with probably getting decent acreage if $4 would hold. So a year ago, we never even saw $4 until the summer. It took the summer to come around before we got it. Probably going to happen again this year, in my opinion.
Thanks for the comments. John Payne, Senior Marketing Analyst, Daniels Ag Marketing in Chicago. Go to danielsagmarketing.com. I'm Dewey Nelson.